Hello and welcome to this free episode
The free one.
Milo is here saying his nonsense. I'm
here most of the time.
30%.
Like the vast majority of episodes.
Of the sentence.
You make it sound like it's an event.
So being done for truancy for your own podcast.
Yeah. Like the podcast that we started together and have been on almost every episode of for the last 6 years.
You miss a couple of episodes. It's like, is everything okay at home?
Milo misses a couple of episodes. We're going through his bins to check his boiler flu. See what's happening now.
My boiler flu.
Also, November, you're sounding very clear.
Thank you. Yeah, the voice training has worked so well that it sounds almost as if I'm in studio with you guys.
She's Claritin clear.
Yeah.
And teaching you to throw your voice to London.
Yeah.
And up in Glasgow, it's Hussein.
Yeah, it's great. I actually wanted to go see the Willy Wonka experience myself. I'm just in one room and one of the AI images are still tacked onto the wall of masking tape, so things are going great.
Working at the Glasgow Royal Infirmary. I'm deep frying halal Mars bars for the patients, and my boss knows I'm doing it, but they can't stop me. They'll say they're racist.
Yeah. And we are joined, of course, by a repeat guest from both QAnon Anonymous and the vaccine podcast, Vaccine the Human Story. It is Annie Kelly, who will be shilling for Big Pharma, telling you to not get polio.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And thanks to my sponsors at the Bill Gates Foundation as well.
Yeah.
Very generous people.
And of course, the Vaccines, the indie band from the early 2010s, who are big fans of your work.
Yeah, I'd love to go to the anti-vax meeting with one person who was just really into the razor light versus vaccines dispute. Confused.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, Bill Gates wants you to listen to the vaccine.
I do love how this podcast has like essential pieces of literacy required, like half remembering an NME article from like 20 years ago.
That's right.
And also like what the Tarpeian rock is.
Yeah. Very niche, very small piece of Venn diagram overlap.
Now, one of the reasons I wanted to have Annie on is we haven't talked about, I think it's worth talking about, a kind of state of the union in terms of pilledness in the UK.
Because our sort of extremism guest will be gratified to tell us that there is still extremism happening.
Well, pills are fine. It's injections you don't want.
Yeah. So because the UK, as we know, is an extremely paranoid place, and it's also an extremely hierarchical place, and it's also an extremely dysfunctional place. And those three things together can produce a lot of
great indie music.
Yeah, but also a lot of people taking various pills, red pills, orange pills, blue pills in some cases.
As did the indie music scene.
Yeah, that's right.
Vitamin D pills, really, the only thing you should be taking in the UK.
Although, I'd like to start, though, with some people who appear to have been, again, pilled by think tanks, but into mainstream political media discourse in the UK, which are the two baronesses who were both successfully sued for defamation by people they baselessly called Hamas supporters, which is actually a crime, which is, I've looked, an aggravating factor in the tortious liability for defamation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's cool how we have a whole upper house of parliament that just exists to crank out weirdos who you have to call baroness.
Kinky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joke's on you. I support Kataib Hezbollah. Technically, that's libelous, and you will retract. Yeah.
This is a very Galloway move. That needle.
And we're going to end today by talking about someone who probably the most genuinely pilled member of the UK sort of government, which is Andrew Bridgen.
I'm genuinely pilled. I just love being my authentic
self. Yeah, the sincerity pill.
Yeah.
Which is a person who Annie knows quite a bit about and sort of, I think, is a fascinating figure in the kind of UK pilledness history. Mm. But I want to start with these two baronesses, right? And this is also same with like kind of similar to Lawrence Fox, right? Where you get so wrapped up in reading like columnists, right? And you get so used to just being allowed to accuse someone of Hamas sympathy as a kind of matter of course that I think just like mad conspiracy theorists, you get pushed so far away from reality that you forget how, like, the law works.
Well, I think also the pomp has a lot to do with it, right? It's the same with Baroness...
The pomp.
Yeah. Baroness Nicholson, the, like, turf one, one of the turf ones, being, like, sending mad letters to M&S, being like, oh, it seems like your Christmas advert was quite woke. I think if people are obliged to call you, you know, fucking your eminence or whatever, you get it into your head, well, this letter that I'm writing can't possibly be dangerously stupid and insane.
Why is Percy Pig now friends with what is clearly some kind of non-binary bovine? I don't care for this new creature. It is not canon in the Percy Pig universe. Colin the Caterpillar, I will accept. As homosexual as he may be, he's not out.
Yeah, Colin is like LGB apart from the T. You know?
Yeah.
But what I want to ask, right, is Annie, as someone who looks at conspiracy, right, how do you see the kind of process of radicalization that takes place among our, like, again, like, think tank political media elites, that they just forget this kind of thing entirely?
Yeah, I mean, I think this speaks to a really interesting condition of the Western conception of conspiracy theories, which has only kind of existed for the last 50 years. But it was a very, like, kind of popular understanding, essentially, that conspiracy theories were points of view that were from outside the mainstream, from outside legitimate institutions that we rely on to assort our knowledge for us. And also typically that they were the last resort of the powerless, right? They were from people who sort of were in, you know, marginalized situations seeking to understand their own lack of power.
Razorlight fans, for example.
Or Tommy Lee Jones, covered in gold body paint, having just shot JFK.
Exactly, yeah.
So please carry on.
You know, this isn't a historical norm, and it's actually only really been the norm in the West for about 50 years or so. In other parts of the world, government figures, very powerful people, are perfectly happy using conspiracy theories to kind of legitimize their own rule, to kind of shore up their own power. And this has been kind of like stigmatized essentially over the course of the Cold War and things like that. But it's not the norm. And I sort of wonder perhaps if we are kind of returning essentially to a kind of world mean where our politicians are just as pilled and are just as happy to use conspiracy theories. And the institutions, the kind of our legitimizing institutions, are doing very much the same thing.
In the long run, it is Vladimir Zhirinovsky's world. We're all just living in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Slutsky took over, you know.
Yeah.
But the matter of Zhirinovsky is not over. Yeah. And I quote from Slutsky directly. Yeah.
I think it's also worth being specific, right? It's not just one sort of Baroness libel action. It's actually two that came out on the same day.
Yeah, there was the Baroness libel. There was the Baroness who said that, like, two scientists were Hamas supporters because one of them had tweeted, like, a Guardian article with the word, like, concerning. And the other was the Baroness who claimed that the University Challenge student who had a, like, octopus cuddly toy mascot
was,
like, secretly signaling support for Hamas and
on University Challenge,
yeah.
Which is confusing because, wait, do you remember when they had that Austrian octopus that was predicting the World Cup results? That octopus actually did support Hamas, but the cuddly toy octopus on University Challenge didn't.
Yeah, Mossad took out Paul the octopus. You know, last thing they did. They were so distracted.
Yeah,
on
he
that,
didn't
they
see that coming, did he? Eight-legged prick.
Yeah. So the but right.
Back to the cab driver character, he's like, yeah, Paul the octopus, he was taken out by the bee.
Yeah, from before we were recording.
Yeah, we were recording.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. All right. But, right, I think that usually, like, the idea that, you know, there are not just, like, people sympathetic with Palestine, but, like, latent terrorists everywhere in society, infiltrating institutions on TV. To see the TV telling you someone's a secret terrorist.
And sending secret messages with what they're wearing and their totems that they bring on and stuff like that. I mean, like, that's pure. Yeah. We understand that that's a conspiracy theory when QAnon users do it. It's just unusual that it was a literal baroness.
Amanda Holden's been sending me some secret messages, such as, Amanda Holden looking pretty good right now.
I suppose we're going back to a time of what, you know, like, Baronesses used to be, which is being driven mad by lead-based makeup.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, Baroness Lead makeup.
Yeah.
She's Lib Dem, weirdly.
Yeah. But I think this comes back to like the issue with building, the issue with a culture war based epistemology.
I find it extremely cringe.
Is that it always leads you into being a conspiracy theorist because you look at normal people doing normal things.
Mm.
And because you can only see the world through the lens of culture war,
yeah,
right? Or in this case, like a moral panic about Palestinian sympathy that has been forced into our pretty standard culture war that everything gets fed into in the UK,
mm-hmm.
right? Is all of a sudden the octopus becomes a secret message,
yeah.
or the like
this woman who is drying her hands next to me in this pub toilet has just mentioned her penis to me for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Things of this nature,
yeah.
you know, just very strange.
Well, because everything has to be in the same category. It's like either you support Israel straight or Palestine gay. Like that, but you're also gay in like a homophobic way.
Yeah.
It's
no, like
not
Colin
clear how that works. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's like one of those old queens, you know. He doesn't. Oh, I just don't get what they're like. He's kind of like a Lawrence of Arabia type.
Quentin Crisp vibe. Yeah.
Anyway. But before we're gonna talk a little more about
Quentin Crisp is the British Tato Man.
Fuck off.
I can tell you've already done two podcasts today.
Yeah, come on, that's good. That's good.
No, it's not Irish, that it's not good.
The Irish listeners will appreciate that.
It's not that it's not good. It's just that you're harder to keep under control than usual.
That's right.
Appealing to the Irish listeners is a kind of like higher level tribunal of what's funny.
The provisional listeners. Mm. Yeah, the real listeners.
Hmm.
Anyway. I've got a couple of news items, though, to get to before we go through our main topic, which is that Andrew Bridgen article.
Yeah.
Where he got so radicalized by the internet that he did a reverse Ackman.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Whatever happens, if you become radicalized on the internet, it changes your relationship with your wife.
Yes.
It either gets better, sort of, as with Ackman, or much worse.
Oh, Linehan.
Yes, yeah. The Ackman-Linehan spectrum.
Yeah, you know? Ackman-Turner overdrive.
Yeah. So, we're going to learn all about, of course, Andrew Bridgen and exactly what happened to him. But there were a couple of items I wanted to discuss first. Firstly, I wanted to talk about, of course, the budget. Now, the budget has very little in it.
Yeah.
There is a cut to national insurance.
It's just a bunch of numbers, really, isn't it?
It's just a bunch of numbers. Who cares? There is a cut to national insurance to be paid for notionally by, I think, £20 billion of spending reductions across like education.
You do some more austerity and you grab the economy by the lapels and you'd be like, show growth, you fucker.
Yeah, yes. Who needs education? That certainly has never provoked growth in an economy.
No. Now, this is also with the caveat that most budgets are fake because usually what happens is they will get overtaken by events within 3 months of their being announced. They're basically just jingling keys for columnists.
I mean, shut up before I come back there and slap your interest rates. Fake budget.
Hey, with the exception of the Truss Quartang budget, which was a dead letter within a day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but also it was a lot more consequenceful than the average budget.
Yeah.
Now, I think there's not much to say on it specifically because it is so, except for, again, like promising more and deeper austerity into areas of the country that can't use it.
I tend to view it, and I'm not an economist, I'm not a mathematician, I don't actually know how to count, but like, I tend to view it as complete kind of incoherence, right? Like, no one can actually give you a straight answer on whether taxes are going up or down, because, you know, we're at this point where anyone who is in the exchequer is like pulling levers and pushing things and twisting things and turning things, and just in the desperate hope of trying to get the economy growing and doing everything except pushing directly next to the stop racism button, the
stop Brexit button.
Yeah, the public investment button.
Oh.
Yeah. So long as they never push that, it's all just very
it's
strange.
Overgrown. There's brambles over
exactly,
the top of that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all just kind of symptomatic, you know?
And I think that, you know, there are a couple of sort of individual line items I want to discuss, but just generally.
Yeah, the tax on vapes.
There is a tax on vapes. Mm-hmm. They're part tax on labor's lawn. They're taxing vapes.
Oh, no.
They're also tanks, like more literally, they're like all of these sort of fake tax cuts, like removing the non-dom tax loophole. They're also doing, because that's like not tax, grabs rather. That's not a real thing, right?
Yeah, but it's something that Labour said they would do something that sounded like.
Now, the thing I sort of want to address before we go into it in more depth, right, is we know one, we or at least one of, we think, like it's a, I think a pretty good theory, one that's worth sort of taking seriously, that one of the things, in addition to everyone went on the computer a lot, especially for 2 years, one of the drivers of like, you know, radicalization, and I think radicalization of people further from reality, has been that the state has stopped working around them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think,
what?
Yeah, so like, this is why I turn back to Annie, right? When you see a budget that says, we're going to get rid of a lot of spending in education, we're going to get rid of a lot of spending in like, or even just in DWP, making like the machinery of the state work. As someone who studies and looks at like radicalization, especially right-wing radicalization, what do you see?
I think sometimes that we do have a tendency to get a little bit simplistic with this and sort of saying, you know, radicalization is just kind of simply a result of lack of investment in these areas. And I don't know, I think...
We didn't teach the kids not to be conspiracy theorists.
I think, you know, in particularly when it comes to education and stuff like that, from the people I've spoken to who work in education and, yeah, are very much, I think, on the... It's one of the front lines, essentially, for bearing witness, I think, to the impact that this stuff is having, particularly on young people. And it could not be clearer, essentially, that teachers are essentially just being asked to, with very little funding, with very little investment, very little actual interest from the supposed institutions that we have for tackling radicalization, things like Prevent and things like this, are sort of just being asked to kind of take on this role, essentially, as kind of deprogrammer on top of essentially all of the other jobs that they're being asked to do.
Like make breakfast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fine though, because we have this whole like Prevent counter radicalization infrastructure, which is definitely good and works, right?
Yeah, and continues to basically lump all of the stuff that we're talking about today in as kind of nebulous ideology, because it's actually still not really even set up for, I guess, what we're kind of seeing is this sort of right-wing manosphere anti-vax freedom movement nexus. It's kind of, I sort of keep on referring to it as an online soup, essentially. That's the only word I can think of for it.
A delicious toxic stew.
Yeah, all of this is kind of, yeah, still categorized as miscellaneous, essentially.
Oh, that's good.
Like, the more, though, that that I think like the state just sort of withers away, right? The fewer services it's able to provide, it's not even saying that, oh, people, when you withdraw services from people, they, you know, they immediately become very radical. But rather just that I think that it's not, it's a little more complex than that. Like people get radicalized against 15-minute cities, not because of like cuts to education or whatever. People get radicalized against 15-minute cities because they're just generally worried that things are slipping out of control and things are flying away from them.
Weird displaced stuff. People get a kind of enervated sense that things aren't working and are shit. I want to do the kind of simplistic thing. I want to believe that people see, like, you know, council budgets fall by like X tenth of a percent and their arm extends into the Hitler salute, you know, involuntarily. But I think there's a place for like the vibe here, and the vibe in Britain is fucking terrible.
Yeah, I think on the 15-minute cities point, I think one thing I was really struck by, and I have been struck by in all of my interviews with the freedom movement, which basically was born out of anti-COVID legislation stuff, but now has very much moved on to traffic policies and 15-minute cities, is how few people I spoke to could kind of conceive of the state as anything other than an essentially punitive force. It's either kind of completely detached from their lives, or it's an authoritarian police state. Do you know?
Thank you, New Labour, for that.
It's hard to blame them for that conception specifically. I mean, in many ways, I often think some of the issues that they talk about, you know, kind of hyper-surveillance, hyper-technology, they're not like necessarily wrong. They're kind of just looking at the wrong direction. They think all of this stuff is happening from the government, whereas actually it's kind of just the fact that we kind of have integrated this technology into our lives. We all accept cookies in every website we go to. Like, they're right that we are being watched and monitored, but it's through, you know, they've all signed up to Facebook as well. Like, it's not happening from, it's not the kind of Big Brother state that they're imagining, do you know?
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, like, because with the British state, when you've lived in Britain for the last 20 years, like, whenever the British state gets involved in your life, especially at like a local government level, it's almost always to make your life worse in some way, which is not a function of state. It's a function of the British state specifically. It's like if your only contact with game show hosts had been Michael Barrymore. And you're like, you game show hosts, what, the people who always drown people in their swimming pool? And then they're like, that was
an extreme example.
That's like not really, like inherent to the vibe of a game show host.
It's sort of a few bad apples situation you know, but really.
All Barrymores are bastards.
Yeah, people are just a guy who assumes that Chris Tarrant also had a guy die in his swimming pool.
But, right, if the state exists in the, minds of people who are increasingly right, that it is not there to do anything for you. It is just there. It is the only powers it has left as the budgets get cut further and further and further and further. Again, in theory, all of these, this is probably, these don't tend to get, these tend to get overtaken by events. Mm. But in theory, right, budgets get cut further and further and further and further. More people will look at that and be like, that's basically right. And
It's even losing some of the disciplinary powers, and yet that doesn't seem to stop people from believing in them. And it's strange because so many of these things were born out of COVID, right? I think it was a lot more, not sensible exactly, but it was a lot more understandable for people to do the, like, you know, 1984 Big Brother thing when it was illegal to go outside for a second walk, right? Mm. Now it's not. And there's, you know, three cops left and people are still like, I am moments away from black helicopters landing on my lawn. It's like, the British government can't afford a fucking helicopter.
I retweeted vaccine truth/virus and now I'm going to be taken away to a black site in Swindon.
Yeah, the sole remaining RAF pilot has crashed a helicopter onto your front lawn.
Yeah. The black site in Swindon is truly the blackest site of all. Can you imagine? Like, there's you know, like, violations of the Geneva Convention, and then there's expecting people to go to Swindon.
Yeah, it's like sort of in the black site. Like, could this be worse? And then you're just aware that there's black mold in the air, and just like,
Now, this is, of course, we know Labour has looked at this budget and said, we will honour it but punish the sick more.
Cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
Rachel Reeves has done another unnerving photo shoot where she kind of looms out of the camera looking like a fucked Noel Fielding to be like, actually, the problem here is people on benefits, so we're going to not let them be that anymore.
Look, after we've been doing that for 30 to 40 years, we just have to do a little more benefits crackdown.
Just one more.
One more crackdown on benefits.
It's sort of like the reflex when the doctor hits your knee with the hammer kind of thing, but for the Labour right, you know?
I think if we want to talk about the state as sort of Annie describes it in the view of someone who is a broad sort of consumer of the internet soup of the anti-vax freedom movement, etc., you could do worse than my next news item. Allegations that have been made about a certain academy in Doncaster.
Yes.
Now,
this is a phrase that really compelled me. Do you have the headline there?
Academy Doncasteis. Is this like a school of thought?
Yeah, doing
Doncaster Academy.
Yeah, the Frankfurt School, the Doncaster Academy. Yeah.
It was Doncaster School branded Snoops for checking on absent pupils' bins.
Doncaster School branded Snoops for checking on absent pupils' bins. It's like Celador, you know. It's very, very beautiful use of the English language.
Well, so a school in Doncaster branded Snoopy because he was looking in their pupils' bins.
They
branded a big bin snooper.
Yeah, the scarlet letter.
What did you expect?
So this is Astrea Academy in Doncaster.
Why are they all fucking named like this?
I mean, yeah, it's like that is, if you want a picture of UK education after privatization.
It's a very like drag queen name.
I was thinking more like hatchback, you know, like driving a Vauxhall Astrea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's close.
But not quite Latin.
If you want to understand sort of the UK education, after like Michael Gove got his hands on it and sort of turbocharged the academy movement, it is chains of schools with names like antidepressant pills, where they like line up the students like and do like fights like Starship Troopers.
I don't think it was good to let various like Catherine Burblesings do the Human Centipede 2 on all children in the country.
Catherine's Burblesings.
Compound plural.
Now, in this case, the article says, Principal David Scales said the visits were conducted out of safety concerns for absent children, and that during visits, staff would check for posts on doorsteps, bins on bin days, cars and driveways, or whether steam was being released and the boiler flew. What we have is we have the B plot of the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off happening in Britain.
The only cops left are the truancy officers.
Now, they
just like your house gets burgled and you have to like call in and say, I have a kid, and they're not coming to school. So someone shows up and investigates.
No, I mean, if these guys' jobs are getting cut, then with the new budget cuts, then maybe I do approve, actually.
A geography teacher in like a badly fitting neck suit with a with like a high vis vest on over the top that says truant detection team.
The bin blue lion.
Yeah, that's right. Can't put yogurt pots in there, mate.
You know, and then, but then, you know, the about the same sort of chain of academies, more so, a resigning teacher, sort of, and this is an Education Uncovered article, said that, you know, Astria, students at Astria are given the usual sort of academy song and dance, which is no song, no dance, no talking, straight line, eyes forward.
Yeah.
You know, which is, again, that's the education you can expect to get in Britain now if you're not going to a private school or like a grammar in Sussex.
Fuck me. One of the little bastards like Andrew Tate so much. At least he's not telling them they can't blink.
But then that's also a private school. So we basically narrowed it down to like, you're just getting like a really like pared down version of what's happening at like Eton.
Fewer like sort of psychosexual traumas.
Yeah.
Where basically this is, again, much like other academies we've talked about, right? Is that the massive amount of control being exerted on students and teachers, because teachers then said, if a student asks a question, take no more than 2 sentences to answer it. You must say this at this time.
Yeah.
You must say books flat, pencils down at this time, minute by minute, word by word, huge amounts of like interference, of direct control of like, again, like, I don't like to overuse the phrase Orwellian, but because Orwellian gets thrown around when you're talking about like pilledness and government control and stuff.
Yeah.
This is where the call is coming from. This is where like the sort of, let's say, extreme order is enforced.
Yeah, it's fascist pedagogy, sure.
You know, and so this goes back to, again, I think what you were saying earlier.
Not having
Andy,
any
right?
pedagogy in my school. It's fucking nonsense.
This goes back to, I think, what something Annie was mentioning earlier, which is there is increasing, you know, surveillance and control, whether it comes from smartphones or whether it comes from privatized or semi-privatized education, rather than where these people think it's coming from, which is teachers' unions, an overreaching state, and so on and so on.
Woke,
So I want to move on now, though, from the state of the state to the state of the pilled. We've talked a little bit about the suppers of the soup, the freedom movement soup.
By suppers, you mean people, agents.
Yes.
Those whom sup. Yes.
Those whom sup on the soup.
Right.
Last time we talked to you, Annie, the main thing was 15-minute cities. Mm. And 15-minute cities seem to be a kind of combination of the extension of COVID lockdown reaction with a kind of global WEF plot. Combined with...
Because you never hear about vaccine passports anymore because you don't need one. So they just moved on to the next thing.
So what's the soup up to? What are they doing right now?
The pro-car culture, I think, is probably still the strongest element of it that's going. Understanding that, honestly, very tedious traffic regulations in various cities are all part of an orchestrated global plot headed by Klaus Schwab.
He's a busy man. He's very invested in like the ULEZ, like Oxford City's park and ride system.
I saw everyone was in that kind of like fascinating way that Jordan Peterson can kind of just tweet something that seems completely out of pocket. He seems to be very on board with this understanding of the world, where he quote tweeted in an Associated Press article which pointed out, I think, that, yeah, forget exactly what the traffic regulation was, because if I'd known that when I started researching conspiracy theories, this would have to be something that I would get up on, as just like various cities and what they're doing about traffic, I probably would have thought twice.
You can't park in Nissan Microns and Giles anymore. They want to destroy our way of life.
That's not so far from what he actually did say.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, the headline pointed out that there had been a great reduction in traffic deaths in this American city, which had trialed this. And Jordan Peterson had quote tweeted it saying that the woke death was coming for the Associated Press.
Not the woke death.
The woke death, yeah.
Woke yeah, death, like, spread by rats.
Is woke death like Korean fan death?
I was thinking more like final death. You know, you die in woke, you die in real life.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yo, hey, you can't die until you give your pronouns.
Mm.
You leave your woke running overnight.
Well, we know that if you die by getting hit by a car needlessly because of everyone's right to drive at 50 miles per hour on a country road, that's the most glorious form of death. And what he's actually saying...
Yeah, because you get isekai'd.
You will enter Valhalla.
And what he's actually saying is that because it's further proof of descending into a more and more godless society by not allowing people to have noble deaths, by being struck by machines, but also you're not giving them the chance to survive and therefore defeat the machine.
You know what we're saying is that if you are a dishonored wandering Ronin who allowed your lord to be killed or otherwise dishonored him.
I perceive all of our listeners that way.
Is what you ought to do is wander around country lanes on Sussex hoping to be redeemed by like a drunk lady in a Range Rover.
Yeah, draw the katana on the Range Rover, mum.
Yeah. That's why I drive a Kia Daimyo.
Yeah.
Mitsubishi Shogun.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It is interesting that like when you talk about right-wing conspiracy theories specifically, right? The story that you often get is these escalating mutual affirmation. And it's a bit like a fractal fern. It can go in some strange places where you end up with people who were, again, like writing best-selling books and being taken seriously some years ago. They just keep getting gassed up by people around them. But everybody agrees, and they tell a story that always has to have escalating stakes, but about just whatever's around them.
Yeah.
And so I guess
our beloved radicalization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so just like, you know, British legislators are getting stuck into the idea that like Hamas support is everywhere in Britain and forget that it's not actually. Right.
A lot of us support Kataib Hezbollah, as I said earlier.
Right.
We find Hamas a little gauche.
But you know what I mean? Like specific, prescribed by the law Hamas support, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually.
Legally, you're allowed to do that if it's a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I was joking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, would be a pretty good defense.
Yeah.
Like, listen to everything else I've said on this podcast and tell me I'm not joking.
Yeah. If you got a total list of groups you've endorsed on this podcast. Yeah.
Father McMurphy.
Every Russian political party at different times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway. That's actually a very Russian energy.
Yeah. True. So is endorsing Kataib Hezbollah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's unsurprising that they would get onto something so weird and low stakes as local traffic regulation that they would turn into a global issue. They're thinking local and acting global, essentially. But also what I find interesting is that like they're still on the vaccinated people are going to drop dead at any given time thing.
Probably when they see the prices of parking in central Oxford.
Yeah. So how central is the kind of general vaccine skepticism to like this same soup as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's really central. I think one thing I've been researching recently, because it really reminded me more of this phenomenon than I suppose what we might call historically conspiracy theories, is Christian millenarianism.
Ooh, yeah.
And the kind of understanding that, you know, the rapture or this kind of event, this great kind of cataclysmic event is about to happen. And you specifically can pinpoint the signs through, you know, reading scripture, but then also kind of matching that up to news headlines from around the world. And in a way, I think this, I'm going to use the word again, soup, has a really similar energy to that, as opposed to, I guess, what we might think of as the classic conspiracy theories of, you know, the 80s and 90s, things like, you know, explaining the JFK assassination, Princess Diana dying, moon landings, things like this, where you're all just kind of like essentially doing a deep dive into one event in the past and saying, okay, we can explain this. What more seems to be the case now is, I guess, this kind of news junkie conspiracism where you have your coda, you know, you kind of have your key, which means that you can essentially unlock all of these seemingly unrelated headlines, these seemingly unrelated events that are going on around the world. Traffic regulations in Oxford, but also vaccine recall over here, the war in Ukraine.
Ginster's pasty bulb, my bell end, so on and so 10, forth.
10,000 sex asses stuck in Cali. Yep.
Yeah,
Joe
yeah,
Biden
yeah.
saying something weird, Sydney Sweeney's boobs, you know.
Yeah.
If you have the code, if you have the key, you can kind of unlock all of this while it happens and understand what the connection is there. And so I guess in a way, it kind of strikes me as a slightly like secular millenarianism. And that becomes particularly clear, I think, when you get this understanding that there will be this one moment of a total kind of, you know, destruction, total kind of apocalypse. Everybody who's been vaccinated starts dying, but also vindication. This is something that actually I know we're going to go on to talk about Andrew Bridgen. This is something that Andrew Bridgen will discuss a lot in interviews, the moment that's coming up when he will be kind of revealed to not have been crazy all along and have been sort of a harbinger of what's to come. So yeah, in a way, I think this kind of phenomenon, this kind of freedom movement phenomenon is more an inheritor, strangely, of that religious tradition than conspiracy culture. In the sense of the kind of, in the classic sense we understand it, kind of JFK and the X-Files and what have you.
Also something born of like huge collective trauma, I guess.
Yeah, because like the mundanity of it really puts me in mind of, you know, like years ago, I remember someone observing that like whenever people like are convinced they had a past life, like they were never a Chinese peasant, they were always like a pharaoh or Henry VIII or something. And it's similar to this, like, isn't it coincidental that like, you, a man who lives in Oxford and hates the Oxford Park and Ride system, have discovered that the center of the global, like, you know, the free market economic forum, whatever conspiracy, happens to be the Oxford Park and Ride system. What a massive coincidence.
But then the funny thing is, right, that all the people online who like you, who've never been to Oxford, who might live in, I don't know, Pennsylvania or whatever, they will join that together with a news story about something that they find upsetting and then find it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's all common cause, it turns out. Klaus Schwab again.
How much of this is also just about like the ways in which this is sort of experienced as like sort of an online phenomena, in the sense that like as you're sort of spending more time online, well, I mean, every sort of aspect of being online is very much individuated, is very much about yourself and how you exist in relation to like other things that you come across, and like the more time you spend online, and I think this is sort of something that it is a much broader phenomena, you know, you are sort of encouraged to kind of like think about everything in relation to yourself. And so if you're someone who is not aware of that, but suddenly you've sort of you are spending all this time online and you don't really sort of know what is happening to you in the process of doing so, and you haven't reached that stage of sort of being introspective as to, oh, why are my relationships suddenly like decaying or, you know, dilapidating, like maybe the computer or maybe all this time I'm spending on my phone might be in relation to that. But if you haven't got to that stage yet, then I guess it's like sort of, it does sort of become a bit more natural, I suppose, that you are going to like try to understand the things that are happening around you. And as you mentioned, like things that you can see, your local community sort of like, you know, becoming a lot worse, things sort of decaying, like these kind of inconveniences that feed all these broader grievances. And if your only place to look at is on the internet, where everything is sort of encouraged, where everything you experience is about, this is how it affects me. I don't know. How far does that go in terms of explaining why this type of conspiratorial thinking is more dominant? Or like, does that sort of go to explain like how it has sort of become a political, or how it sort of reached like mainstream politics so quickly?
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's the case. I think something about the format and the structure of social media, to me, seems to have really shaped the way that these conspiracy theories move as well. They're always looking forward. They have this prophetic quality that I was talking about before. But yeah, they're also kind of, I spoke to the media theorist Douglas Rushkoff a while back, and he kind of referred to it as pontilist in a way, where it's like sort of kind of completely incomprehensible when you're kind of like looking just kind of close up at one event, but sort of is like being kind of meshed into a larger image where each like little point connects to the other. But there's no, I guess, satisfying narrative conclusion, was his point. It's just this connects to that, which connects to that, which connects to that.
It's stochastic and individualized. Everyone gets to be the protagonist investigating this huge conspiracy.
And We're going to talk about one protagonist now. Andrew Bridgen.
Britain's most special boy.
Britain's protagonist.
Yeah. He's the guy it's all for.
Yeah.
If you look at something in Britain, you wonder, why is it like that? It's because of him. Andrew Bridgen.
It's because of Andrew Bridgen. Yeah.
Listen to our new podcast, Bridging the Gap. We talk exclusively about Andrew Bridgen.
Now, Andrew Bridgen was formerly a Tory MP. He was someone who I think we've talked about briefly in the past.
Yeah.
And
they finally got one, is the thing. Like, the thing about radicalization, it's kind of right-wing radicalization, right? Is they go for like high-value targets as much as they can. Elon Musk, Bill Ackman. And they got a Tory MP, not a hugely important one, but he is an MP still as an independent, and he's radicalized, he's pilled.
And he has recently written a letter.
Mm-hmm. Why do MPs do this?
Sir Mark Rowley, Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, saying, I'm contacting you as a serving MP seeking an urgent meeting to discuss some very serious and concerning issues.
Most of the things in Mark Rowley's office right now are on like various stages of being on fire. Yeah. And on top of this, just like landing softly on top of the in tray is this single sheet of like closely typed A4 that's like, what about the woke?
Well, in this case, it's what about the vaccine?
Mm-hmm. Yo, fuck. How many Met officers have been vaccinated, making them woke?
This is a matter of paramount importance for the well-being and safety of the British public. I and others deem this to be a national emergency. The usual routes via the Standards Committee, government departments, regulators, and civil service have all been dismissed or ignored.
Everyone else says I'm stupid, but you have to listen to me.
Well, it's a conspiracy.
Yeah.
It's like that whole thing about the right-wing students getting bad grades on their essays because of the left-wing conspiracy.
Yeah.
Very serious criminal offenses, to name a few... misconduct in public office, misfeasance in public goods, negligent manslaughter, fraud, murder, manslaughter, grievous bodily harm have been identified as well as a conspiracy to commit in aiding and abetting the aforementioned crimes.
Negligent manslaughter, where you do manslaughter, but in a really sloppy way.
And he's basically said, right, we want to charge everybody involved with the vaccine rollout and COVID response with murder. In fact, or not in so many words. Right. And
but like not in the cool way.
No.
Not in like the actual all of the people that they killed by the stuff that they didn't do, rather than the stuff that they did do.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. It's so funny how with a lot of this stuff you're like, oh brother, you're so close. You're so close to seeing what actually went on.
Yeah, Matt Hancock killed everyone's nans.
Yeah. But, exactly.
They want to get the vaccine guy.
Yeah, but do we want to charge Matt Hancock for that? Mm-hmm. No, we want to charge Matt Hancock for saving people's nans, you know. It's like Matt Hancock is like Batman,
and we're forgetting
punishing
pussy.
Him for the good stuff he did instead of the bad stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
And now this is what Bridgen has come out with,
Mattman,
recently.
Yeah,
but he's also come out of his marriage to his ex-wife.
I don't think you can be phrasing it like that.
Yeah, parallelism, not worth it.
No, it was funny. I just
parallel phrasing. Now. So how did, just in brief, right, how did Andrew Bridgen get to the point of writing an I am not a crackpot letter to Mark Rowley?
It's an interesting story, Andrew Bridgen. He was always pretty right, even on the Conservative Party, self-described Thatcherite. He was pro-Brexit. Basically not someone who I politically share much in common with. But, you know, when I was researching him, by all accounts, he seemed to be like a pretty decent local MP. He wasn't particularly ambitious in the sense that he kind of wasn't like a real schmoozer. And I think that actually tends to, in terms of MPs, it actually tends to make you like pretty good at your job. You kind of just focus on your constituents. I think it's one of the, you know, because he didn't make many waves before all of this COVID stuff. But one place that he did get written up about was during the Horizon Post Office scandal, where he was supposedly quite tenacious with a local constituent's case who turned out to have been one of the many, many people falsely accused, essentially, as a result of the computer error that happened there. And lots of MPs actually really didn't want to touch that stuff. They were sort of kind of hedging their bets with it. And Bridgen, to his credit, really took up the cause. And this has kind of been written about by journalists who were covering the scandal. So it's kind of funny to me because in a way, that seems to me like a personality type where, you know, someone who's less concerned about their career, less concerned about saying the wrong thing, can actually be, it's an example of how it can be a strength as a politician.
Mm-hmm.
In Bridgen's case, that was maybe the only case I could find where it was a strength. And a lot of it was also him kind of saying outrageous or sexist or homophobic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to, you know, humanize the...
Yeah, that's something you can say for the conspiracy theorists. They do have a tendency towards intransigence, which can be useful.
Yeah, you know? And I think, you know, this personality trait of his, perhaps sort of not being afraid to be a bit outspoken, not being afraid to be a bit tenacious, not being afraid to question authority, combined with what I guess we'll go into a little bit more, which is clear problems in his personal life. And it wasn't just his wife. I think he went through some nasty acrimony with his brother as well, who he owned a company with, and they ended up suing each other, I think.
Oh, would this be the vegetable company? Because I'm just sort of lightly scrolling the Wikipedia page. In 2014, AB Produce, of which Britain was director, was warned by the Environment Agency that it could lose its license if it did not remove a urine-like smell from two lagoons of putrid vegetable matter on the site.
A urine-like smell? Yeah, just so remove the smell. Yeah. We don't have any issue with the putrid matter.
Please stop pissing in the putrid vegetable mass pond. No, I will not.
This guy's apparently rotting fruit company.
Yeah. You're telling me Charles Schwab wants me to stop pissing in my rotting vegetable pit? No.
Yeah, they want you to, like, they're insisting that everyone uses fertilizers instead of the most natural fertilizer of all, which is your own.
Yeah, they do it to demoralize you.
Andrew Bergheim.
Andrew Bergheim?
Yeah, that's it. That's where the joke was going. But I accidentally used the wrong word at the wrong time.
Sorry.
Yeah, Andrew Bergheim's brother went to live in Bergheim. Went to live in Bridgen. Bridgheim. There we go.
The Bridgen piss guy.
What a stroke ass sentence.
Yeah. So this is the article in the Times, which is sort of written sympathetically to his wife, who, by the way, like, also kind of a wingnut.
Yeah, but she, you know, got a sympathetic piece published in the Times and he didn't, so.
Andrew Bridgen was in Sweden speaking at an event hosted by RFK Jr.'s anti-vax group while his young son was at home facing a medical crisis.
Just with the 50 normalist Swedish dudes.
Yeah. Mm. Former conservative MP, who's been a leading voice in the global campaign against vaccinations, ignored frantic calls from his wife, Serbian opera singer Nevena Bridgen, who was... alone with
Serbian opera singer is just like a great title for this man's wife's old.
Yeah, as the five-year-old's health deteriorated. So her husband, basically, she says, whilst this was happening, her husband was on the streets of Sweden, quote, acting as an anti-vax revolutionary and neglecting his son during a health emergency. It was at that moment that she finally concluded her husband had been captured by what she considers a cult. And what I find interesting about this article, right, is that she also says, she criticizes the Conservative Party for failing to protect him from radicalization, to which I'd have to ask, how? Like, how would you protect someone from radicalization when your stock in trade is, like we've talked about, I think, recently, your stock in trade is winking and nudging at these kinds of things.
They're supposed to be the officer class of this, I feel. And, you know, he's being, you know, pressed for a common sailor, if you like. I read Master and Commander and it infiltrates my brain. I just talk like this.
He's
now
windmilling his cock in the barracks.
Exactly.
And the colour sergeant is very angry.
Exactly.
Pull yourself together. You're a lieutenant.
Yes.
I mean, it's worth saying, I think, I don't know if the article, I can't remember if the article mentioned this, that there was very much a organisation set up with, I think, the, yeah, with what I would describe as the explicit intention of red-pilling MPs on COVID and vaccines. Mm. They were called the Health Advisory and Recovery Team. And they kind of specifically, had sort of, I guess, two tiers on this where, you know, part of it was looking like a kind of a think tank that was, you know, simply kind of questioning the legislative orthodoxy on what to do about COVID. But there were some quite dramatic leaks of their internal chat logs, which showed that pretty much everyone involved was actually much more pilled than they were letting on. And Bridgen, along with some other Tory MPs, I think Desmond Swain might have been one of them, were
minor Bond villain type name.
Were in these chat logs, it was revealed that they were all talking to these Conservative MPs, but I'm not sure about Desmond Swain. Bridgen was definitely one of them. And yeah, I think this was quite early on as well. And so I think it does seem that, he was, I mean, one thing I found interesting when I was like looking at Bridge and social media activity is kind of, I went right back to his very first ever tweet about the COVID vaccine. The first one kind of suggesting something might be wrong, and it's much milder than the tone of that letter, for instance, the crimes against humanity stuff, the conspiracy to commit. But it's just kind of questioning some kind of efficacy. And it, I think it has like 900 retweets compared to the when he's talking about other topics where it's like 10 or 15. So there's clearly kind of like a big instant social media excitement. Oh my God, we've got an MP. And this kind of very quickly takes hold in the freedom movement. But there's also like a two-tier kind of targeting going on here. It's not just on social media. It was also, he was one of a group number of Tory MPs who were quite clearly targeted by this organization.
Well, and, you know, this is, we talk about like what happens on social media to radicalize powerful people. We've seen it a million times, is basically love bombing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Where you will be inundated with messages of support. So the article says
AI art of yourself as some kind of crusader knight.
It says speaking in a hotel to the paper, Navina said, "The anti-vax conspiracy movement destroyed my life when Andrew became their foot soldier. He's building Andrew's army to mobilize support for him and his views before the general election, launching a website last week urging people to become his foot soldiers to help him overturn the old political order."
How likely is he to lose his seat?
I mean, how many anti-vax people live specifically in his area, and how many of them would be willing to travel to like go door knock and be the most annoying person to ever come to your door?
I just think it's very funny if the tide of big Keir sweeps over like northwestern Leicestershire, and none of this ends up mattering at all.
Yeah, it would be funnier if it had like really like unexpected second order effects. Like they had so many insane anti-vax people doing door knocking that everyone in this county mysteriously became a Jehovah's Witness because they were so such a high threshold had been set for door knocking annoyance that they were much more open to.
It's probably quite because like I didn't have like something to this extreme, but we have like Tory councillors in the area that we live in, and they. And they're sort of obviously doing like electioneering, and like it's very strange talking to them because it's like, well, if you're a local councillor, then like I'm going to talk to you about local issues if you do show up at my door. And they're so insistent that like the only thing they want to talk about is ULEZ, right?
Really?
All they want to do is talk about ULEZ. But it's sort of like, yeah, but you know, I want to talk about the bins. I want to talk about why my bins. Like genuinely, I have a lot of concerns about
teachers keep snooping
bin.
Through this.
Well, because your bin men might have been vaccinated.
No, but the problem is even if you want to snoop with them, the way that the system works is that like it is incredibly difficult to do so. So in many cases, I want it to be easier to snoop through my bins, personally speaking. But like when I was like trying to talk to them just about this stuff because they had just shown up at my door, you could just sort of see that the moment you kind of bring up that to them, they just don't, they're like looking for the exit faster than you are. And I can only imagine that this is probably going to go the same way because in the same way that like turf shit, I feel like the sort of anti-vax stuff, and obviously like there are lots of overlaps in it. The anti-vax stuff is very much follows that trajectory of like once you're in it, you sort of become obsessed by it, and you can't think of anything else. And your references and like
Master and Commander,
yeah.
The ability for you to hold like more than one idea in your like in your head just becomes impossible. Which also means that when you have to interact with someone who doesn't have that deliberation, who like can like think about multiple things at once, like you just genuinely don't know what to do.
I think that you can see this. And this even goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, right? That across a lot of different segments of the right, whether it's mainstream or sort of more fringe like Bridgen, the obsessions are becoming more difficult to get out of. And I think the broader trend, we can talk about the just the steadfast refusal out of political principle to ever be normal about anything. I will not be normal about like the university student on the game show. I will not be normal about the panel of academics I'm overseeing. I will not be normal to the person who I'm door knocking because they won't stop because they won't listen to what I have to say about like the Bilderberg group and the vaccine. I will not be normal about like this week's host of SNL. I will never be normal.
And it's refusing to have the veneer of normalcy, right? Like we've gone from like, it's always been possible, like if people say we're protesting for Palestine 15 years ago, to say like, oh, well, you know, what they're doing is they're enabling Hamas with this support. Like this is what Hamas wants and Hamas are bad. Like you could always say stuff like that. But to take it a step further and go, no, everyone there supports Hamas and they think it's good that Hamas kill children or whatever, is like, it's a level of obviously not true insanity that like you just didn't really have before, or at least not in any kind of like mainstream political discourse.
But at the same time, and I'll make this very quick, but like you kind of have to, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, Annie, but it almost feels as if like, even if you sort of know that like that's not the case, and like obviously like people who are like marching for like Palestine at the moment are not Hamas supporters, and it's very evident. Even like there are like right wing sort of YouTubers who have sort of gone down to these protests, and they've had to sort of make admissions to that. But in order for you to sort of like because you've sort of gone down the hole so much, and in order to sort of justify like these very extreme ideas that like really motivate your way of thinking, or at least sort of direct your way of thinking, the other side has to be portrayed as like just as extreme, even if they're not.
Mm.
And so it doesn't really matter, like, you know, the sort of opponents in this exist in a way that really, again, it's all like kind of reactionary, but it's all sort of like in reference to yourself. And like, so to justify your shitty behavior, the only way that you can do that, or the only way you can justify it, is by saying, well, my opponents, my enemies are sort of acting just as harshly, acting just as sort of cruelly. And so I have to, almost as like a form of defense.
And I think that's true as well, whether you're talking about like, again, mainstream radicalization or far right radicalization.
Yeah, they're never ever going to forgive us for making them in their minds be this weird.
So being a phone soldier in Andrew's army, he says, will require courage. It will
phone soldier.
Yeah, a phone soldier.
Yeah, the rise of the phone soldier.
It will not be for the faint-hearted. But if you share my convictions about this issue, that's issues I raise, and want to ensure that I can get through to my constituents despite the ever intensifying attempts to cancel me, become a phone soldier in Andrew's army today. So basically, the people in Andrew Bridgen's constituency are about to get inundated with calls from like a global network of people who also think that Mark Rowley needs to investigate crimes against humanity committed by like British civil servants.
Bridge and phone soldier, watch news from America.
Yeah,
there we go.
Right. It's a, are you willing to be the most annoying person anyone has ever heard? Have you tried to pay in pennies at a petrol station to make a point?
That's right.
Come and be, join Andrew's phone army.
And it's also embarrassing. It's also American.
Yeah.
Why are we... Get your own conspiracy theory.
Yeah, back in the day, it used to be Tim Farron talking about the chemicals, but now...
Yeah. You know.
So, just before we end, right, there's a few more things in this article about Bridgen. So, last February, he hosted a dinner at the Carlton Club, where he's allegedly now banned. What you have to do to get banned from the Carlton Club?
Well, you've got to piss on the photo of Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
It's run. It looks like Dorian Gray now.
Looking at the sort of Thatcher memorial and being like, vaxxed.
They included, guests included John Mappin, a hotelier from Cornwall, who said that mask wearing was a Holocaust of the mind.
Wow.
Yeah, he also...
Hard to hear this from the inventor of masks.
He also, he owns a castle in Cornwall called Camelot and flew a QAnon flag from it at one point, John Mappin.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Mappin also claimed that the Duke of Edinburgh died as a result of being vaccinated. Now, that is true.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, that is 100%.
Yeah, I mean, he was so young.
The benefits of the vaccines, they really just keep stacking up.
97-year-old men don't just die.
They don't. No.
I mean, first, like, it stops you from, like, getting COVID as badly, maybe stops you getting COVID at all, and it kills the Duke of Edinburgh. What's not to love? They give it to you free. Our taxes at work paid for killing the Duke of Edinburgh.
The first red flag for Naveena came when she heard him speaking to a group on a Zoom call while at her sister's flat in DC during Christmas 2022. She said, it was crazy. They were all talking about crimes against humanity and someone saying that this was all done to eradicate the population. They went on to say something along the lines of, you have to do your job and call out the mainstream media and tell people the truth. This is your mission. The person spoke of a global military alliance, and they were basically saying that the military should take this into their own hands. Days later, Bridgen then went to Parliament and said, as one consultant said to me, the vaccination is the biggest crime against humanity since the Holocaust.
Yeah, which is the thing that got the whip suspended from
him.
Yes,
indeed.
Justly.
Yeah, that is genuinely interesting because it's something I just noticed on Bridgen's social media activity too. I don't quite know who he spoke to when he was out there in the United States or like what happened, but basically there is a big switch during that time, from before that trip in December 2022 or winter 2022 from before that and after, where he sits before seems to be kind of implying that he thinks that it's being overlooked, essentially. There is a mistake is happening when it comes to the vaccines. And what comes after, where it's very much this has been planned, this has been orchestrated. He starts coming up with stuff like COVID was cooked up in a American lab and things like this. It just becomes much more pilled, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed.
Is the word.
And what strikes me about how this this call is being reported is it was being reported as something fun and action-packed and high stakes. Mm. Something where, again, he gets to be the hero. And I guess with one of the reasons is I think he's an interesting character as a conspiracy theorist, and why, again, in like sort of conspiracy theorist politicians are not a new phenomenon, certainly, right? But it's interesting to see them not being a conspiracy theorist about something in particular, but just having a kind of news conspiracy brain, right? Is that someone will say to them, you know, you need to do something about this. You need to get the army in and sort all this stuff out. And this is someone who has like 1/600 and somethingth of the power to call in the army. You know, this is certainly not enough to do anything by himself, right? But this is someone who can hear that that call to action and say, okay, I'll give it a bash.
Oh, I mean, like, if Mark Rowley had been like of a mind to take that letter seriously, that's the like makings of a judicial coup. It's just that he wasn't, because it's one guy who doesn't really matter and who we can laugh at on a podcast, you know.
And so it's an interesting. It is definitely a new dynamic, right?
Yeah, it's cool. It's based. We think it's epic.
It's all very good stuff.
Mm-hmm. It is a new dynamic to see, like, the soup take in different kinds of people than I think most people expect it to take.
There's weirder ingredients in the soup all the time.
Yeah, I think it's worth saying as well, I think that there are other conservative MPs who share Bridgen's beliefs, but like are just a bit more career savvy with it. Do you know? Mm-hmm. Basically, what made him unignorable was the tweet comparing it to the Holocaust. Mm. Before that, he was kind of, you know, he was being annoying, but sort of on the sort of annoying level as a few other MPs who were kind of making anti-vax noises, meeting with anti-vax groups. But yeah, I do think it's a silly counterfactual, really. But I do think, you know, if COVID had happened during a Labour government, we would have seen actually way more Andrew Bridgens in the Conservative Party.
Mm. And this is the other thing too, like, very quickly, just, you know, the once the election's called, and once like so many of these Tories like no longer occupy like political power, they have a lot more freedom to basically like indulge in the soup, right? Yeah. And so, you know, right now, like, this is sort of the quiet before the storm, and we're sort of expecting, and what we should expect, much weirder things to happen once Labour come in and have no intention to like do anything about it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Great.
For a second course, more soup. Yeah. But it's worse.
A think tank full of soup.
Waiter, there appears to be some ideology in my soup. You could say.
It's all ideology, mate.
Waiter, there appears to be some ideology in my soup was the title of the 1930s Trash Future. Yeah. Did not go over very well. It was largely like holdover from music hall stuff.
Yeah.
But no pedagogy, because we're not nonsense.
Yeah. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, Annie, thank you very much for coming on and talking to us today about this delicious soup that we're all being served every day.
Mm. Thanks so much for having me.
And also, don't forget to check out your podcasts. Where can people find them?
Yeah, so you can find me on QAnon Anonymous. I usually produce an episode for them once a month. Having said that, I'm actually just literally just on maternity leave this week, so I won't be for a while, but you can go and check.
If you wanted Annie, this is your last dose of Annie for
that's
a while.
It. Yeah.
This podcast.
But yeah, you can go back and check other episodes I've done for them. And yeah, also if you want to hear me be a big pharma shill, you can go and listen to me talk about the first ever vaccine, the smallpox vaccine, at Vaccine the Human Story, which is just a little 6-part mini series where it's been talking about the smallpox vaccine and the first ever anti-vax movement.
Also, the usual outro material, there is a live show, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, tomorrow in London.
Yeah. Sprint towards London.
Yes.
Backyard Comedy
from
Club.
From wherever you are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just begin sprinting, like
start
the T-1000.
From San Jose, California. Just see if you can make it in time.
Yes.
Probably you can't, but if you can, be very surprised.
If you can, we'll let you in for free.
We will.
We can't promise that.
Not a promise.
No, legally it's not a promise.
And also, there is, of course, the bonus episodes for $5 a month. There are the $10 Britannologies in Left on Red. If you're wondering why November is talking a lot about sails and sheets and ropes and boats, it's because we did Master and Commander.
It's called cross-promotion, and it's also called having your brain rewired by a book you read.
Yeah, rewired, or would we say re-rigged?
Yeah.
We would say re-rigged, I think.
You just ocean-pilled.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. All right. All right. That's all we've got time for. Once again, thank you, Annie. Once again, thank you for listening, and we will see you on the bonus episode in a few days. Bye, everyone.
Come see me in Australia. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.